Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Dungeon. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Hello. Chris Casso.
Hello.
And Cole Hornaday.
What's going on?
Hey. And it is...
How you doing?
It is not... Make fun of coal night. I don't know
not.
What you're
it
talking
never
about.
Is. All right.
What make fun of
about?
Coal month.
Yeah. Come on. Hey, let's make a month of
it's
it.
It's
month.
Starting.
Because this angry little man isn't small enough as it is.
Oh, it's getting warm here in the old comics dungeon.
Because you keep making me talk, man.
I can feel my energy getting zapped. But something that would perk me up is reading about something that I was initially kind of reticent about. It's that Dark Horse is going to be producing a Mystery Science Theater 3000 comic. And when I first saw this headline, I'm like, come on. But then I read the description, and what's actually going to be happening is that, where was it? It's going to star the new MST3K. Mm-hmm. I forgot his name. It's here somewhere.
The
I'm not going to find it.
Yeah,
that guy. It's going to be written by Joel Hodgson, and it's actually going to be...
Jonah.
Jonah Ray, that's it. The crew on the satellite of love will be forced by their captors to read old public domain comics. Now, there's not a lot of information here, but I want there to be like old reprinted panels with little silhouettes in the little front.
That's probably exactly what they're going to do.
Probably exactly what they're going
to
do.
And I love the fact that I first read it, and I'm like, why? What are we going to do? Tell the origin of Tom Servo? That'll be cute, but I'm not going to pay money for that.
Yeah.
And then when I read that they were going to be, lambasting public domain comics, I'm like, okay, this could be stylistically, it's in keeping with what they do. So I'm gonna, I'm really super curious now.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Netflix series, the new one?
I haven't.
I've watched them all. I've watched some of them repeatedly, and
really?
They grew on me because I'm a fan from all the way back. Joel is my favorite. That. Era.
Yeah, me too. And that's why I didn't watch him, because I like Felicia Day. I like Patton Oswalt. I don't really know
the weakest links in the show.
But I don't want to watch this and have it ruin my whole MST3K experience.
It won't do that.
Did you watch them all?
I watched them all. I just finished them last week.
Yeah.
I liked some a lot more than others.
Of course.
I like certain moments a lot more. But it didn't capture me the same way it sounds like it captured you.
I don't know if it can capture that magic of the original show. I don't think it ever will. But let's look at it this way. I didn't hate it, and it started to grow on me as I got to the end. I think Patton Oswalt and Felicia Day are horribly, horribly underwritten, and they're missing an opportunity for charm that TV's Frank and Dr. Forrester had in the original series. But I didn't hate it, and I'm actually looking forward to another season. So,
Cool. There was something else I was going to say about Mr. Science Theater, but I forgot it. So let's move on.
Okay.
A few days ago, the Walt Disney Company made an offer of $71.3 billion, with a B, billion dollars to purchase 20th Century Fox, topping the $65 billion bid from Comcast. And Fox has said yes. So the two of those companies are going to be going down the aisle.
Maybe not yet.
Maybe not yet.
The word accepted is a weird word.
The article it says now don't take accepted as this is a go ahead. It's just that's the best bid so far.
Right.
And if nobody counters that offer, then it could go through.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like Batman marrying Catwoman?
No, there's a lot more lawyers involved.
So secretly somewhere, who would be Time Warner is using all these other properties, and we will break them.
Yeah. Yes, pretty much.
Comcast still has an opportunity to return with an even higher bid. Anyway, this is interesting because it will reunite the licensed Marvel properties in the movie franchises all under one roof.
Which could be good.
Wonder how long that would take, though.
Yeah.
Well, it probably won't happen. If this goes through, probably won't happen for another 10 years because all these movies are already planned out through 2025 or whatever.
Yeah. But they can amend them.
They've reslotted before. They could reslot again.
Look how they amended the Tom Holland Spider-Man into it.
Yeah.
They did that. That was pretty seamless. I was pretty impressed how they did that.
I doubt any of those movies that are whatever... maybe Guardians 3 or some other movies that are slated for like Phase 5 of the MCU have even been written yet.
Right.
So, anyway, speaking of the Tom Holland Spider-Man, the sequels, according to Mr. Holland himself, in a leak on Instagram that was probably a sanctioned leak by the studio, is going to be called Far From Home, Spider-Man Far From Home. And I got to thinking, are we going to have dumb home titles for every single one of these Spider-Man movies?
He leaked that while he was here in Seattle.
Yeah, when he was at the con, Ace Comic Con. He was saying, I don't know what's going to happen because, you know, the end of Infinity War happened and I don't know, but I'm going to read this thing and I'm excited.
The moment I do, I'll probably let it out by accident.
Yeah, because he's got loose lips.
Yep.
And they sink battleships. Yes. All right.
Yes. And Anthony Mackie will be there to tell him all about it, how he messed up.
Indeed. And finally, in another little bit of news, again, I want to talk about this in terms of the retail perspective that we have here, is that GameStop is planning on selling comics. GameStop doesn't really have a good reputation in the gaming community. Yeah. And I'm wondering what kind of, you know, what kind of reputation they'll have with the gaming community when they also try to do, you know, diverge into other businesses.
So it's worth noting that years ago when DC published a Gears of War comic, it actually became one of the best-selling comics for at least that year. I think it actually hit another record. And it didn't sell in comic book stores. It sold at GameStops and other mall outlets. We had the creator here, the writer here for that, and he was mentioning it to us. He's like, it's one of the best sellers. We're just like, not here, sorry. And so it's worth noting that, like, Dark Horse has doubled down to get as many video game properties as they can, and they make these really affordable, nicely done $30 to $50 art books about video game design art and all that, and, like, the Legend of Zelda omnibus of whatever. And
they also do the Dragon Age nice library edition of all those
and
comics,
The Witcher,
too. And The Witcher,
doing.
They have a nice hardcover coming out.
And there's two other companies that are picking up all of these licenses as well. Titan and I think Dynamite's done a couple. But so that's all stuff that doesn't sell that well here, maybe in some other comic book stores, but it'll probably sell at gangbusters over there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, makes sense. I don't feel too threatened because, you know, I doubt they're going to be carrying tons of mainstream and
mention mostly Marvel, especially with, like, the Spider-Man game coming out.
Yeah.
That they will be doing stuff. And they were only going to do, like, a select amount of comics and not really do, like, a backlog of stuff.
Yeah.
And just really concentrate on some specific things. So
they did mention that they were just going to have, like, spinner racks in the stores. They weren't going to devote a whole wall to
exactly.
I can see them devoting, like, one little wall space to all the heart covers art books because that's $50
exactly,
and that stuff is so nicely done and affordable by the Dark Horse standards that it's just like that would be a money maker for them.
Yeah,
so it could be very interesting. Not feeling too threatened.
No. And GameStop's already been doing a lot of pop culture stuff. Like, I've been to one down south that half of it was just pop culture merchandise and then the other half was video games. So they've already moved that way, so having like a spinner rack of comics doesn't seem like that much more to do. And I think it's select stores too, right? It's not like across the board. There
was
something
I think
that
it's
was
a trial
limited.
program.
Yeah, so
we'll see.
Yeah.
Alrighty, cool. Well, friends, let's move on. And we've had a couple of guests during our Panel Jumper live shows that have been autobiographical cartoonists. The most recent one, Lonnie Mann, and of course, Tatiana Gill. And so let's talk about autobiographical comics. What sets them apart from other first-person narratives? And the other question I have is, does the fact that it's, quote, based on a true story add anything to it?
I think it does, but I'll repeat what I said off camera before, off mic, which was that one thing that sets them apart is they're almost always going to be depressing as hell. And people want that because it means it's going to be interesting. It maybe gives you a different viewpoint into some, you know, life experiences that you may not have experienced.
Right.
But I also think that if anybody wrote a book about how great their life is, we would hate them instantly.
That's right.
And
well, and also
we would hunt them down so they can make a sequel about not doing that and the repercussions of bragging. So
I lost what I was going to say.
Sorry.
That's okay. Well, I was rolling with what you were saying.
I was thinking about how a friend of mine introduced me to Harvey Pekar in American Splendor. And he said, yeah, it's this black and white, oversized comic book. And it's kind of undergroundish. And it's basically like this, just this guy in I can't remember where he lived, Ohio?
I think that's, yeah, that sounds...
And he was, Cincinnati?
Cincinnati?
I think it was Cincinnati. Yeah, this guy works for the government in Cincinnati, and he's really grumpy all the time, and he loves jazz records, and oh, he's a friend of Robert Crumb. And anyway, he gets these artists to tell his little snippets of his life, and, you know, what would otherwise be mundane and boring, it's actually kind of interesting in that, and then we talked about how... You can elevate the mundane to something entertaining solely by virtue of the fact that someone else is telling that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
the quality of them as a storyteller.
Exactly. And I went out and got a collection of the huge collection that was out in the 90s of American Splendor, and I was absolutely fascinated by it. Now, I have not read a lot of his other books, but I've always meant to. And I did see the film, and I thought the film of American Splendor was superb, and I highly recommend it. But yeah, he kind of like set the pace for people telling biocomics. I think at some point I still looked at some, for some type of inspiration from them. You know, what is transcendent? I was thinking about Persepolis and Marjane Satrapi's story, and no, it's not a happy ending, but as a result of surviving the Ayatollah's takeover of Iran and her being an expatriate in France and in Europe and growing up away from her family, there's a lot to be learned from that story.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot to be learned from her about her culture and who those people are that we may not have an opportunity to learn otherwise. And you know what? Harvey Pekar lived this working class existence that I know nothing about. I know working class existence, but I don't know that one. And I enjoyed learning that story.
Yeah, that reminds me of what I was going to say.
Okay, great.
Was like you get to peer
Did I
into
vamp
somebody.
For you?
You get to peer into somebody else's life, and hopefully you can gain something that may be inspirational or moving.
Sure.
I mean, there's one that I did a memoir of somebody overcoming anorexia and that sort of thing, and the struggles there.
Is that the one? Oh, so I was going to ask you because you had mentioned before you took a lot out of my.
Lesbian experience.
My lesbian. I was going to say my favorite thing is lesbians.
I know it's my favorite thing is monsters.
Different thing.
Yes.
Yes. It's really hard not to say that my favorite thing is
experience.
Lesbians. You know what? It's not wrong because they're both lesbians.
There you go. But my
loneliness.
My experience with loneliness.
Yes.
So yeah, because you had mentioned like she. Well, I read that too. she has a lot of problems and a lot of things she's trying to work through, and she doesn't necessarily. Succeed,
yes.
But she does get to a better place, and she keeps trying.
A perseverance to it, even though there's constant failure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot to be had in people who are struggling in life, but who keep trying, even if they keep failing.
Mm-hmm.
You told a great story about a horse in Japan while ago that was the horse that never won at this racetrack. But then they did enough marketing around this horse that it became a champion for like perseverance and never giving up.
Yep.
And everybody loved the horse, even though the horse always failed.
And it saved the racetrack.
Yes, and it saved the racetrack. So it's one of the, and now it lives in like a nice, a sanctuary, living a sweet life.
Yeah.
So it's something like that, but done in a memoir. And like, even if things don't end up being great, it's still a real person with real events that they had to deal with something.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to peer into somebody's life. You didn't know something, maybe like Persepolis is great because you get to learn so much about culture and history from a place that you may not know. And so that they can be really great for that.
And that was where I was going to go with. I was going to mention a book I read not too long ago called Marzi, a memoir that was published by Vertigo. And it's about growing up in communist Poland. and during she was born in 1979, so it's just like a whole outlook of a place I've never been to and never thought of. Mm-hmm. And very engaging. Just you get to see it through a child's eyes, because she's just kind of remembering how her parents reacted to all the politics that were happening. So yeah, you get to just experience a whole nother land that mm-hmm. you might not be able to go to at some point. Yep. Or point in time. So, yeah.
And then there's stuff from like Lucy Nisley, and she's just gone through a whole bunch of her stuff in life. Like Relish, My Life in the Kitchen's all about her cooking experience. There's been stuff about her being a bride and going through the wedding thing. She's currently writing something about
having a baby, maybe
children or something. Children. Yeah, I don't know. And then she's done travelogues and stuff. So it can be very mundane as well, but also somehow there's some sort of spin on it that makes it exciting. There's something about breaking it up, like Lonnie Mann's Thoughts from Iceland. It's like he's just taking some trip, you know, but then it's like, but it's so much more. There's something in the visual nature of it that can make something really interesting.
There's a very weird one that I shared with all of you that is a memoir, even though it turns into a weird horror story, and it's called Soon We Were Both Screaming.
Oh, yes.
And it's about this this father.
It's a webcomic.
Yeah, webcomic. Raising his child, and the child's a bit of a handful. And
it's an understatement.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
The child is a terror.
It's a terror. And he's losing his sanity, and he's getting worried about, like, is he going to, like, not be a good father because he can't deal with his kid? He's going to yell at the kid or something like that. And he sets the kid in front of Mr. Rogers. And then the story starts to take turns for the horror story, where something weird happened on the Mr. Rogers show and they think they saw a monster. So that definitely not real. But I was rereading some other stuff about that guy in that review, and everything up to the point was based in real life. So he was sharing like the stress of having a terror child and the worries he had of like, he's not an abusive person, but dear God, like he did lose it one time and told the kids to just shut up and stuff like that. And so you just, you can get these interesting mergings of weird stories.
Yeah.
Because you did read, I think you replied to that.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of horrific because there's a monster in one of the videos that the kid's watching, and you only see it in shadows and sounds, and it's like, what?
And the kid shuts up, too. Yeah, it puts the kid kind of in their place.
It gave me goosebumps because I'm like, what's going on here? And then it's not addressed at all, you know?
Nope.
It's just they just kind of go on their happy little way.
I don't remember actually seeing the screen. You just see the characters.
But it's in shadow.
In pure shadow.
Yeah.
You just see like a lump of forms.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted, going back to that one specifically, I kind of wanted that panel to be an animated GIF and to just see something kind of like
shivering.
Just subtle.
Mr. Rogers, though.
Well, it wasn't Mr. Rogers. It was something that was haunting a Mr. Rogers YouTube channel.
But still, it's Mr. Rogers, you guys.
It's like a creepypasta, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah. But something like that could be a good analogy for how difficult things can be. And I think it also is a useful tool because people who are reading that who may be experiencing something like that can feel a connection to another human being. So they can be very powerful as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could just give you shivers.
Yes. Yeah. Any autobiographical comics we would push on people? Say, you need to read this.
I pushed these at the live show. I'm going to push them one more time.
Yeah.
I just really like her artwork. Lucy Bellwood. Mm-hmm. She also did a book called 100 Demons.
100 Demon Dialogues?
100 Days of Demon. Something like that.
It's a lot of demons.
Look up Lucy Bellwood. She does a bunch of travelogue books. One of them is Down to the Seas Again, The 38th Voyage of the Charles W. Morgan, a visual voyage aboard the last wooden whaling ship in the world, and Rim to River, Seven Sweltering Days in the Coolest Canyon on Earth, and books like that. But the Demon 100 Day whatever is... Basically, her dealing with day-to-day anxiety, depression, stress in the form of a little demon that tells her, like, you're too fat to be wearing that, or why are you bothering to do this work, or something. Mm-hmm. And it's her just overcoming it day-to-day.
Yep.
I love her style. And I like the message of that book specifically.
Days of Demons Past.
Yes. 100 Ooh, Demon one. Dialogues.
There you go.
That's
100
the collection.
Demon Dialogues.
Yes.
Yes.
So is Lucy Bellwood local then? Because we get that through
Portland.
She's in Portland.
She's part of Periscope Studio, which
Ooh-ish.
Is full of a bunch of people who do autobiographical material, including
Erica Moen,
who started a successful Kickstarter series, basically that are sex education comics.
Yep. And she just did another one that specifically focused sex education, because her Oh Joy books just go through different things like reviews and different things like that.
Yeah.
And also have a lot of education in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are autobiographical and educational.
Excellent. Yeah. And I see that here at the store you have an entire section based on auto, bio, and journalism comics.
It kept on expanding and expanding.
Yeah, it's gotten bigger.
I need more space. So.
Yep.
One of the ones that I was thinking of picking up is John Lewis's March about his experiences during the Civil Rights Movement. And I'll tell you why I was thinking about that. David Letterman has a Netflix series called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. And his first guest is Barack Obama. And if you haven't seen it, it's a really fascinating interview. Even if you didn't care for Letterman's shenanigans when he was late on a talk show host, he's really mellowed out. And he's got a great conversation with the former president. But in it, he also talks with Congressman Lewis and walks across the bridge that was the scene of these civil rights atrocities. And looking at that and seeing that interview and seeing that moment being played back in stock footage and memories, it really, really made me want to go back and read all the read the March series. There's three books of them. The last one, I believe, won an award. We spoke about like a Pulitzer, or not a Pulitzer, but a some sort of a prestigious award that's not normally handed out to comic books. And we've spoken about it on the podcast before. It's not coming to my mind. I wish I would have written it down.
Maybe it was a Pulitzer.
What's a Pulitzer?
A Pulitzer.
A Pulitzer.
Pulitzer Prize for Literature, probably.
Yeah, something.
If you know, email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com or just look through our archives, because it's in the show notes somewhere.
What I just really want is for a certain current president to start bitching about the next volume that he releases so that it can up sales again, because that did happen.
Did it?
Yes.
Yeah. He tweeted an angry tweet about March, and boy, did I have a lot of people wanting to buy that book suddenly.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, and he does have a new book coming out, which is called Run. I think it's Run.
Run?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think so. So, yes.
With the same creative team, do we know?
I think he has a different artist.
Okay.
It's won like 4 literary awards, so there's a lot.
All right. Do we have any final words on autobiographical comics before we move on to Book Report?
Be prepared to be depressed.
Yeah.
And maybe learn something.
Learn something while being depressed.
All right. Yes.
Chris votes sadness. I vote inspiration.
I always vote sadness.
It does feel a lot like public therapy sessions when you put out a comic book of the struggles that you've been through. But from what I understand, of the people that I've spoken with and have read about, it actually does help.
Yeah, good.
So, all right, let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Nicole, let's start with you. What do you want to tell us about?
So a not autobio comic called Unnatural Number 1 came out. It is focused on a beautiful pig girl, though, so that's exciting. It's by Italian artist Mirka Andolfo, and it's already been published in Europe. This is finally being published in America, and it's in an anthropomorphic world, which I know a lot of people don't like, and I want you to get over it. Because the art is very gorgeous, and it's also very sexy, so it's a mature comic. Not explicitly so, but just lovely. And it focuses in a world where reproduction has gotten really low because there's all these different animals, and people, like a pig person, might want to date like a wolf person, but they can't procreate. So it's a problem. And so they've created this program that if you do not find a partner of your own species by 25, you might get put into this reproduction program and pretty much just get matched with somebody and that's it. But she keeps having these fantasies about being with some mysterious wolf man. And she's like, it's very strange. I don't know, like, why I'm having these dreams. They just seem like so vivid and stuff like that. And so there's a little bit of a mystery there. Like, is this something that is like prophetic? Maybe this person I'm going to meet, or maybe not. And in the meantime, she's living with this cute roommate, and she keeps having these dreams and ends up making out with various inanimate objects like her pillow or her wine glass or something like that, because I guess they're so vivid. I don't know. But it's got a lot of fun to it. It's very very cute, and it's just really beautifully drawn, really, really gorgeous work. So I would recommend trying this out. It's been recommended by people who liked Sunstone, but I feel like it is a little bit different in that it might not focus as much. Like, that was in some of the advertisements.
I understand the why.
I understand why, yeah. But I feel like it's a different tonal thing because it seems more like an adventure than more like a study on humanity or like human emotions or something like that, you know? So anyway, I would definitely recommend checking out Unnatural. It's published by Image. The first issue just came out, $3.99. I think it's well worth it to try something new and fun.
Cool. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Cole Hornaday, what do you got?
Well, I picked up the latest collection of BPRD, The Devil You Know, Messiah. So we're still doing the BPRD books. The subset is now The Devil You Know. And the sub series, our storyline, is called Messiah. Right? Am I getting this right?
That sounds right.
Because tracking these, so I'm so glad they put these in collections because I could not track them on a monthly basis. I do read these. I get them from the library. You know, I'm a huge Hellboy fan. I like the BPRD, but I've never felt like those stories really were up to par with what Mignola did with his Hellboy character. Now that the Agru Hem and the Agru Jihad and all the giant monsters have all been wiped out, they're kind of reconsolidating Mignola and company. It's Mike Mignola, Scott Alley, Lawrence Campbell, and Dave Lawrence Campbell illustrations, and Dave Stewart doing the inks. Who, you know, and Stewart is just brilliant. Reevaluating all the characters, we're kind of reassessing the story, and everybody who has survived is sort of like kind of recuperating. So you've got a lot of the characters that you've known throughout the series, but characters are coming back, like Abe Sapien has finally turned up, and you've got bad guys coming back, like Cronin and you know, the evil guy that was made of sand from the first Hellboy movie that was Rasputin's general-at-arms, and then also, the little Nazi girl. Floating head in the jar. What was that guy's name?
What is it?
It was German. I know it was German.
Von Klimt. Oh. Von Klimt. What? Of course, Von Klimt. And in the meantime, the evil Russian demon that looked like the cute little girl in the flouncy dress who was kept under the bell jar, Vivara, she's escaped, and she's actually roaming the countryside in the U.S., and she's pulling a cult together. The story is actually getting more intriguing to me now because once the world has been destroyed, who is left to pick up the pieces and what emerges from the ashes? Something even more evil is forthcoming. I don't want to ruin this for you, but the very last page of the book will,
but I will anyway.
Will keep me reading this book until the bitter, bitter end.
Yep.
Because it was a happy, happy resurrection happening. So I don't want to give it away, but if you're a Hellboy fan, you'll be really, really happy. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all I have to share.
Okay, cool. BPRD, The Devil You Know, Messiah. Thank you, Cole.
You're welcome.
And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got?
I'm going to talk about The Magic Order number 1 by Mark Millar and Olivier Coipo, whatever. And, man, I really wish, like, we've been in some weird bizarro dimension because for the past couple, like, I don't know, almost a decade now.
Wait, you liked it, didn't you?
Yeah. Come on.
Do you need a hug?
Yeah. All right. So it's okay. A little bit like, we'll see if I'm okay by the end of the series.
Okay.
It's a little bit like if you took Harry Potter and mushed it in with that movie, Catch Me If You Can, I think it was called. Basically, all the magicians of the world, like the stage magicians, really are wizards. But they, you know, keep it under wraps, and they've been protecting the world from otherworldly horrors this entire time, but on the down low. And the series starts with one of them being murdered, and there's some shadowy figures that are looking to start killing wizards. And there's like the order is basically what's been protecting us, and there's a schism inside the order, and everybody thinks maybe this one rogue wizard is the killer, but it might be a little too obvious. And so it's setting up some interesting subplots. There's one core family that's the story's focused on, and the father is like still a stage magician catching bullets with his teeth, and he's got a wild daughter who's drunk and doing children's parties and getting caught by the police by doing illegal things at the children's parties. And he has a son who's kind of the hot Turk. He's the one that thinks that he's going to be the next in command. And then he's got another son who is retired because something terrible happened because they do magic. So a lot of that seems pretty basic, but there's interesting setups for who's killing the other wizards. And Coypel's artwork is fantastic. It's just very clean. It's very smooth. And I've always liked his work when he was doing like some Thor, a lot of Marvel stuff. So I'm kind of a little bit more here for him, but it's Mark Millar not messing up again, and that in itself is kind of interesting.
Is it mini or is it ongoing?
To my understanding, it's a mini, but right. It could be more. All he does is minis; like he keeps coming back to Kick Ass and all that. Yeah. But it's worth noting that this is a Netflix. They bought the Millar world rights.
That's right. So that's published by Netflix.
It's published by Image. But it's basically advanced
Netflix imprint or something?
Preview of Netflix. I don't think it's really an imprint.
Huh.
But there's a huge Netflix ad on the back. And that's the thing, because Netflix is going to be losing all the Marvel stuff pretty soon because Disney's going to make its own streaming service. So they're playing the game. And who's got a wealth of material under his own imprint? Mark Millar. So Magic Order is probably going to be one of their first TV series they adapt, and they're just kind of getting this out there beforehand. Mm-hmm.
And Mark Millar's always looking to sell his stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's like very common
with
for
Kick
him.
Kick-Ass, he sold that before he'd finished the series.
Yeah.
So, and that was particularly intriguing to me, was that to see the film and then to read the end of the series. And Chris doesn't care for this at all, but I was kind of fascinated by it all. Now, what was the deal with, wasn't this non-returnable?
No, like there's never going to be, there's no reprint.
Right.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a, I don't know what the word I want to use for that. A bad thing, but I guess a good thing to get people's attention. But it just sucks that I can't. But there is a high print order, so I've been able to reorder this a couple times.
Oh, okay.
It just means that there won't, once that original
which
printing's
done,
gone, that's it.
Wow.
That's fine. As long as you have a big print run, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But no idea how long it's running.
I feel like it's a 6-issue, but I can't back that up.
Yeah, I thought it was just a mini.
Yeah, I feel like it's a mini. He can't do an ongoing anymore. That man doesn't know how to.
Yeah, he just does arcs. So if he comes back, maybe he'll do a volume 2. But
exactly. Yeah. So it's actually worth checking out. It's well done. This is from. Keep in mind, this is from somebody who hates him. Yay.
All right. The Magic Order. Thank you, Chris.
Yes.
Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time, but before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Horn today, and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as the Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, as well as 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Every once in a while, I've said this so many times, every once in a while, I still have to stop and think about what I'm saying. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions come to us from me. And because it went over so well, and because it appeals more to my creative writing instincts than my comic book researching instincts, I'm going to give you a part two of, I'm calling it Anthony Mordain. All right. Here are five more multiple choice questions. Five.
You guys, that was one dead pause. That was really terrible.
Pause. I didn't say hold for laughter in my script.
There are so many quizzes that I love.
Do you want to try?
This is not one of them.
You want to try it again?
What? Yeah. All right. Here are five more multiple choice questions about that comic book writer who moonlighted as a bad boy celebrity TV chef. Number one. Fox created a short-lived sitcom based on one of his books. Which was it? A. Kitchen Confidential, about a New York bad boy chef named Jack Bourdain. B. Medium Raw, about an LA-based pastry chef named Anthony Bourdainish. Or C. Gone Bamboo, about a Vegas-based madam's husband named Anthony Boudoirdain. I gave that one away. No, it's not C.
That's the one I want.
It is A. The show was pulled after airing only 3 episodes, starring a then unknown Bradley Cooper as Jack Bourdain. Number 2. Even though he traveled 250 days out of the year, he never ate what? A. The hotel buffet. B. Airplane food. Or C. Food from the roadside taco trucks.
A.
probably say airplane food.
I was going to say airplane food.
It is airplane food. Bourdain told Esquire magazine, there's almost never a good reason to eat on a plane. You'll never feel better after airplane food than before it. Number three, Bourdain had a sneaky way of finding the best food in a town before he arrived. What was it? A, anonymously posting on local online bulletin boards an opinion that place X is the best place in town and would wait for others to correct him. B, reviewing the health and safety inspections posted by the city and looking for the worst review because, you know, they focus more on the food than the ambiance. Or C, calling up random places saying he worked for Guy Fieri and only electing to go to restaurants who refused to serve Guy Fieri.
I'm going to go with B.
I like C, but it's going to probably not.
The actual answer is A.
Oh,
again, Bourdain told Esquire magazine on how he would provoke nerd fury. Go to a number of foodie websites with discussion boards. Let's say you're going to Kuala Lumpur. Just post on the Malaysia board that you recently returned and had the best rendang in the universe and give the name of a place, and all these annoying foodies will bombard you with angry replies about how that place is BS and give you a better place to go. Number four. Passionately hated what? A, passion fruit. B, Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. Or C, brunch.
I think it's B.
It is C, brunch. Aww. He told Fresh Air that at times it was the only work I could get, and I came to hate, you know, when you're cooking 300 omelets a day and scraping waffles out of the waffle iron and making French toast and pancakes, you know, cooking hundreds of pounds of home fries, those smells, those associations, those were very painful times. And finally, he and his No Reservations crew accidentally found themselves in the middle of what situation? A U.S. military drone strike in Istanbul, B, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, or C, the Israel Lebanon conflict in Beirut. It is C. The episode turned into a first-hand account of him and the crew trying to escape the conflict and was nominated for an Emmy Award in 2007. Later, he would cite that as a defining moment in his career. It was the trip when he saw a city and a people torn by conflict, while still managing to hold onto the possibilities they would be something more. That was the moment that made him want to tell stories to the people behind the headlines and ultimately make his CNN show parts unknown. Hopefully, he noted in one interview, you will come back smarter about the world. Well, thank you, friends, and thank you for indulging me. That is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.